Hello, and welcome to Apparitions and Alibis. Here, we explore the stories of true crime, paranormal encounters, and odd, forgotten history. I am your host, AJ Stallman. In each episode, we explore perplexing true crime, unexplained phenomenon, haunted locations, history's forgotten corners, obscure events, or even unsung heroes. Join me on these twisting journeys of the past, present, and ethereal. On 1436, Cheswick Lane in Virginia Beach, Virginia, sits the Ferry Plantation House. Built in 1830, this Federal-style home is three stories and brick-laid. There are original mantels, original 6-inch heart pine flooring, as well as historic wooden trim and interior window shutters. It stands where the first brick courthouse for Princess Anne County stood, and the site was used for ferry services operating from 1642 until the 19th century. In 1986, the deed was turned over to the City of Virginia Beach. The Ferry Plantation House stood abandoned until 1996, when a group of citizens saved it from demolition. The Friends of the Ferry Plantation House, Inc. began renovating the same year in partnership with the City of Virginia Beach. Hello, Merlin. Courthouse bars are actually still on one window today. In 2004, the house was listed in the Virginia Landmarks Register, and 2005 in the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. The building has been used as a plantation, courthouse, school, and post office. Currently, it is an educational center and museum. With how old the building is, there is no wonder why it's said to have multiple ghosts haunting the area. One of the more well-known ghosts is that of Grace Sherwood. Grace was born in 1660 to Susan and John White of Pungo, Virginia. At the age of 20, she married a small farm owner who was respected in the area, James Sherwood. On their marriage, Grace's father gifted them 50 acres, and when her father passed away, the rest of the 145 acres went to the Sherwood family. The couple had three sons together, John, James, and Richard. Even though it seems like a large amount of land, the Sherwood family was fairly poor and lived in an area where most people did not own land. Grace used her land to farm as well as grow medicinal herbs to heal people and her farm animals. She was described as being tall, attractive, and having a good sense of humor. She also wore pants instead of a dress, which was unusual for the time. She was taught to tend to a farm from her father, though it was a man's job, and this caught the eyes of many suitors, which she always turned away. People rumored that she had a black cat and bathed in a river at midnight. Add on that she acted as a midwife for some expectant mothers, and here we go. We have a witch on our hands. The combination of clothing choices and good looks may have been what caused at least a dozen lawsuits to land in her lap from neighboring villagers. The tales of witchcraft may have even been made up to remove her from her land so it could be sold off. The first claims against Grace Sherwood was early 1697, when a Richard Capps alleged that she had used a spell to cause the death of his bull. The court did not make a decision, and Sherwood filed a defamation suit against Capps that ended with a settlement. 1 year later, she was accused by her neighbor John Gisburn of enchanting his pigs and crops. No action was taken by the court, and a second defamation suit failed. Later in the year, Elizabeth Barnes would claim Sherwood had turned into a black cat in the night, entered Elizabeth's home, jumped over her bed, drove her and whipped her, and then left via a keyhole. This claim went unresolved as well, but every time this happened, Grace and her husband had to pay court-related costs. According to an article by Richard Beale Davis, they had grown tired of Grace's nuisance, even though she wasn't actually doing anything. In 1705, Sherwood was in a physical altercation with her neighbor, Elizabeth Hill. She sued Elizabeth and her husband for assault and battery on December 7th and was given 20 shillings for damage. That's about $292.46 in today's money. However, just a month later, the Hill couple accused Grace Sherwood of witchcraft. She failed to appear in court for whatever reason, and on February 7th, the court ordered her to appear on charge of Elizabeth Hill having a miscarriage, stating it was a curse from Grace. In March 1706, the local justices sought two juries, both made up of women. The orders were to search her home for waxen or baked figures that may show she's a witch, as well as to look for demon-suckling teats by examining her. Both juries refused to carry out the searches. March 7th, she was examined by a jury of 12 ancient and knowing women who were appointed to look for markings on her body that may be brands of the devil. They discovered two marks that were not like theirs or like those of any other woman. The forewoman of this jury was the same Elizabeth Barnes who believed Grace could shift into a black cat and travel through keyholes. Neither the colonial authorities in Williamsburg nor the local court in Princess Anne County were willing to declare Grace as a witch. Those in Williamsburg felt the claims extremely vague and on April 16th instructed the local courts to get into the case more. Every time Grace had a court appearance, she had to travel 16 miles from her farm in Pungo to court. May 2nd, 1706, the county justices noted that while there wasn't a certain act of malice, there was great cause of suspicion. With this, the sheriff of Princess Anne County took Grace into custody, though she could give bond for her appearance and good behavior. July 5th, 1706, the justices ordered a trial by ducking to take place with her consent, but heavy rains postponed it until July 10th, as they feared wet weather would harm her health. She was taken inside Lynn Haven Parish Church, placed on a stool, and ordered to ask forgiveness for her witchery. She replied, "I be not a witch, but a healer." About 10 a.m. the same day, she was taken down a dirt lane, now known as Witch Duck Point. She was bound and thrown from a boat. She managed to untie herself and rise to the surface, proving, in their eyes, to be a witch. What she actually did was untie herself and then swim around the boat laughing. As punishment for her witchy crimes, Grace Sherwood spends 7 years in jail. While incarcerated, under the dark of night, people would take her supplies. In return, she would tell them advice on how to heal their sick and ailing loved ones. After her release, she returned to her home and lived in peace until around 80 years old when she passed away. In her will, she left 5 shillings each to her sons, Richard and James, while she left everything else to her eldest son, John. Her home on Muddy Creek stood over 200 years. After multiple vandal arsons, all that was left by 2002 were the brick chimneys, which have since been bulldozed. All that remains now are some of the foundation, which is overgrown. The land is now owned by the federal government as part of the Back Bay National Wildlife Refuge. April 21st, 2007, close to the site of the colonial court and the ducking site was unveiled a statue of Grace Sherwood, complete with a friendly raccoon and basket of rosemary. The raccoon represents her love of animals and the rosemary, her knowledge of herbal healing. She is thought to be buried under a tree that still stands on the property of the Fairy Plantation House. While you can visit the site today, maybe go before dark. Many who live in the area state that on clear nights you can see the shape of a woman with long, wet hair walking the banks of the river, maybe reliving her near-death experience. Unfortunately, we do not know as much about the other spirits as we do Grace. However, they are just as important and just as present. In 1826, a lady in white fell down the stairs. Psychics that have visited have given some insight on what might have happened. Some say that her heel accidentally got stuck on the hem of her dress, while others say another person was the cause. It is said that she loved visiting the racetrack and is seen today wandering the fields where it once was. She has also been seen riding an older bicycle with larger wheels than modern bikes. It was recently uncovered that there was a roadway where she had been seen biking. Belinda Nash, an advocate for the Witch of Pungo, recalled a time at an oyster roast. Her friend came up to her, asking her to introduce him to a beautiful lady he saw that evening. After more discussion, he revealed that the lady was riding a bicycle on the plantation. Belinda had to inform him that it was the lady in white, and that the union just wasn't meant to be. Years later, it seemed as though he was still mourning a love lost forever. Staff members have seen children pressed up against the wall on the second floor landing. With there being two children's deaths in the home, it isn't but so surprising. Around 1850, a little boy named Eric fell from a low window and passed. And in 1860, Charles and Isabella McIntosh lost their 5-year-old daughter named Bessie. Bessie was one day away from her birthday and passed away from what is more than likely yellow fever. She may be the other child on the landing, and today a painting of her hangs in the building. Another spirit you may encounter is that of Sally Rebecca Walk, who stands in the window mourning her fiancé John. There is a southern magnolia planted by Sally in memory of the Confederate soldier. Thomas Williamson, who was married to a Walk, has been seen painting at the top of the stairs, and sometimes chains ring in the halls of the building from what could have been the old courthouse. There are also photos taken that show spirits standing in the windows. Two photos seem to have been women standing in the windows as clear as day, one in the green room and another in the best parlor, where a sad, pregnant woman is seen. We do know that Isabella McIntosh was 8 months pregnant at the time of Charles' death in the Civil War while serving the Confederate side. He was captain of the ironclad Louisiana when it was destroyed in 1862. Captain McIntosh died May 13th, and his son Charles Jr. was born that June. Also, around 1810, there was a shipwreck at the ferry landing that killed passengers. These spirits can be seen around the plantation. Last, but definitely not least, is Henry, the spirit of a gentleman slave who can be seen trying to begin a fire in the fireplace. His room is guessed to be in the attic where an extremely old H is carved, perhaps for and by Henry himself. He's also a more talkative spirit, answering simple questions and getting upset if people are rude. He lived his entire life on the plantation, and even after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. One EVP session with him suggested he was content with his life, and his favorite pastime was to go fishing. If you are interested in visiting Fairy Plantation House and meeting the spirits, they offer an option that you can rent out the entire house with a group of 12 people for the night for $250. Which is a steal if you think about all the possible experiences. Get your grandma and uncle in there with you. Make it a family affair. That concludes this episode of Apparitions and Alibis. If you have any stories, historical tidbits, or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to us. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. I hope you found today's story captivating and thought-provoking. Until next time,
keep your eyes peeled, your mind open, and your alibis